This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here in Money, Riches, and Wealth, here with Christopher John O'Shea. Christopho, how are you?
Andrew, I'm doing well. It's great to be here. I was going to call you Mr. T, but that would kind of rearrange things. It would take the order away from your father.
That's right. He is still Mr. T. He is the man.
Yes.
And anyway, we have a guest, but we don't have a guest. So we have a guest, but we don't have a guest.
Tell me about that one.
It's a bit of an antinomy.
Yeah.
So we have a guest. His name is Steve Levine. Wrote the book The Powerhouse, and it's talking about batteries. You think batteries? Batteries sound boring. Why would financial guys talk about batteries? Well, the answer is because the battery is the holy grail of energy. And energy is what makes an economy rock and roll. And, you know, if you think about it, solar power is wonderful, except when the sun's not shining. cars, electric cars, you know, whether you're a green person or a yellow person or a blue person, it doesn't really matter. If you can operate a car inefficiently with less complexity than fossil fuels, you're going to do it. You know, it's not a matter of whether I'm green or not, but you give me a cost-effective electric car that's cheaper to run and easier to keep running, I'm going to buy it. I could care less if it's green or yellow or blue. It's irrelevant to me. And that's the way most people think of things.
Sure. Well, I like the way, the first thing in his book, in the jacket, it says a super battery would change the world.
Yeah, it would.
It would undermine Russia's Vladimir Putin. It would endanger Saudi Arabia's ruling family, threaten OPEC, and transform China into one of the cleanest industrializing nations on the planet.
Oh, yeah. You know, the battery, you know, we think, you realize it's because of the breakthrough in batteries that we have all the mobile devices that we have. I'm sitting
sure.
here with an iPad next
right.
to me. You got an iPhone. And they would not exist if it wasn't for the breakthrough in batteries that we have today. The laptop computer would not exist in the way that it does if it was not for the breakthrough in batteries that we've had in the lithium-ion battery and so forth. And that's why we wanted to talk about it. But we have a guest, but we don't have a guest because the guest hasn't called in.
Yeah.
And I always ask, make sure I have a backup phone number. Well, for one time, I'm looking, and I don't have a backup phone number. I can't believe it. Somebody's going to pay for this tomorrow.
You can't see me. It's like the kids, you know, like when they hold their eyes, they can't see you. They think that you can't see them.
Well, it's my own fault because, I got the emails and I never looked to say, mm-hmm. We never have a problem with our guests. They always call in when they say they're going to call in. And this guy, you know, he was supposed to call in, was it last week or the week before? And he couldn't. He got derailed. So we postponed it to today. And he said, oh, I'm on. He just emailed. I'm looking at it. May 25th. Yeah, I'm on. I'm good. Anyway, hope he's not listening. That's probably why he's not calling in. Anyway, so, well, you know, we could talk about batteries ourselves, but we ought to just turn it into an open show. What do you think?
I think I'm with you. Yeah,
so
sure.
We're just going to turn it into an open show. We'll let our listeners be our guests, and they can ask whatever questions they want. They can ask questions about batteries if they want, or they can ask questions about IRAs or estate planning or income taxes or insurance or elder care planning, college planning. We were talking some college planning ideas with some clients just recently. Oh, you're going to talk college. That's what I was thinking about. You're going to talk to a client tomorrow about college planning and some of the cool strategies you can use, especially if you're high income. You can't get a benefit of all those those credits and so forth. So anyway, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask your question, since we have a guest, but we don't have a guest, so now our listeners are our guests, and we're just going to, if he calls in.
We got plenty of those.
If he calls in, we're just going to ignore his call. No, we won't do that. We'll probably take it.
You got your hands on the controls. What can I say?
We're going to go talk to Jay in Cadenceville because he likes batteries. He wants to talk about
batteries.
Sounds like
a great idea.
Maybe he knows more about batteries than Steve knew. So
there you go.
Jay.
I thought I've read or heard that that guy who built that car, the Sesame or something car.
The Tesla.
Tesla. That he's as research and development place that he's building a better battery.
That is, well, sort of true and sort of not true. If you had this guy, Steve Levine, on with us, he would tell you that Elon Musk, who runs Tesla and so forth, what he's doing is he's using old technology and pushing it further and further to the limit. And so what Steve Levine is talking about is that scientists are working on a new technology of batteries that will, you know, substantially exceed the amount of export or the amount of energy with charge discharge from a battery and hold it longer for a longer period of time with more power than what any battery known to man right now has the ability to do.
Okay. Well, I thought he was involved in that. You know, he's not just pushing with the technology today to the limit. He's looking down the road. I feel sure he is. He's got.
Well, there's no doubt he is. I mean, he's looking to all kinds of different technologies. And where what they're really saying is that Elon Musk was brilliant in the sense that he took older technology and advanced it to the point that it could be commercialized in automobiles and, some of the other areas. Like, he's coming out with a new battery, which I think it costs $10,000. Oh, and this battery, you would mount it in your house, okay? And
right.
What it would do is it would actually hold a charge for your house to run for 24 hours, okay? Now, you would think, well, he's talking about a sort of an alternate to a generator, right? And then that's sort of true, but that's not the whole gist of it. So here's the key. He's got this battery, puts it in your house at night, at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, bam, this battery starts to charge, all right? And then in the morning, at about 8 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden, bam, this battery starts to discharge and run your house when electricity is most expensive. And then back again at night at 1 o'clock in the morning, bam, the battery starts charging again when electricity is the cheapest. And boom, in the morning, you start running your house again. It's actually a brilliant strategy. And that's where Elon Musk differs from these scientists who are trying to come up with a better battery, is he's using commercial thinking as to how to use batteries to create new products for people, regardless if you get the super breakthroughs that Levine is talking about in this book.
Now, I just wish, and you probably wish with me too, I wish, you know, it's like cancer research. I wish everybody would be in one place.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, and there are competing forces. And, you know, part of the story that you're reading in this book, The Powerhouse, is that after the downturn of 2008, 2009, President Obama brings in, what, $2 billion, $3 billion for the advancement of battery technology. And instead of giving it to the main people who are doing the main research, he divvies it out to all these different corporations, you know, who were, you know, probably big donors to his party and so forth,
right.
You know, and only little bits of money. But, you know, there were some good things that came out of it. But Levine would understand. Look, he's calling in, Steve. He finally heard me insulting him.
Okay. Good. Nice show.
All right, Jay, you take care. We'll talk more about batteries in the next part of the show.
Thanks.
We got to go to traffic, and we'll be right back. Hopefully our guest is called in with Nick React. Take it away, Nick.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBS.
All right. We're back.
We are.
That's Freebird with Leonard Skinner, yes?
Layla. Derek and the Dominoes. It's Eric Clapton.
That was close.
Derek and the Dominoes.
I don't know much about music, obviously.
We have our own Derek. He could probably sing that song.
Yeah, that's true. And we got our guest on the line. Who's our guest tonight?
Our guest is Mr. Steve Levine, and he's the author of The Oil and the Glory and Putin's Labyrinth, and we could probably spend a week or two talking about that. He is the Washington correspondent.
That's his mind.
He's the Washington correspondent for Quartz, where he writes about the geopolitics of energy and technology. He is also a future tense fellow at the New America Foundation, teaches energy security at Georgetown University's School of Foreign Service. My daughter graduated from there. And is a former foreign correspondent for the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. He lives in Maryland, and he is with us as our guest on WCBM. Drew?
We're doing his book tonight, The Powerhouse. Steve, are you there?
I am, and I apologize to you for being late.
That's okay. Didn't bother us at all.
We had fun. We had fun in the meantime.
All right.
Anyway, Steve, we were talking about, for that first few minutes there, we were talking about how, you say the battery is a world changer, a great storage for energy, something more advanced than what we have right now is a world changer. And I agree wholeheartedly. That's why I was excited to have you. Why don't you just tell us quickly why you think that's so true?
Thanks for that question. The first thing to know is that there's a caveat in there, and that's that if the super battery is built, and I expect this to take place, but we should all know that it's not here with us yet.
Right.
But it's a world changer because it is a technology that will undermine many of the economic and political presumptions we have about the world. One, for example, in the same way that we've seen shale oil, the prices cut in half, undermined Russia, undermined OPEC. We have the same exact impact that we have if we create a super battery.
So what's so different about a super battery and batteries we have right now?
About three or four times as powerful, and the impact being that you can drive 300 miles on one charge and pay the same price for the car.
What do you mean by that?
It means that.
What do you mean by pay the same price for the car?
So say that you wanted to.
Because the Tesla yeah. runs 300 or 400 miles.
But it costs $100,000.
Okay. So that's a big difference.
So he needs a super battery. If Elon Musk himself has claimed that in the year 2018 he's going to sell his cars, he's going to sell a new model. It's called the Model 3. It's supposed to go 200 miles, but instead of 100,000, it's going to cost 35,000. But to do that, he needs to have some pretty significant advances in the battery that he has in the car.
So, and the funny thing about his cars is that he's actually using an older technology than the current one that most people use, sort of, right? Nickel cobalt, isn't that what he's using, or something like that?
Yeah, and it's nickel cobalt with some aluminum in it, and it's sold by Panasonic. It's an off-the-shelf battery. He puts 8,000 of them in the floorboard of his new car, the S. His belief is that there may not be a super battery soon, so his play is to do as well as he can with the engineering of the car, meaning making technology on wheels a really cool car, and then hope that every year he can make incremental improvements in the battery. He's the only one doing that. All of his rivals, for example, American car makers, all of them are in the game of trying to make a super battery.
But now,
lithium ion is what most batteries, as we know, for like mobile phones and iPads, is lithium ion the approach that this super battery is also using?
Yes. So everyone believes that for now and for the next 10 years and probably longer, lithium ion is going to be the go-to battery for everything we use, electronics and cars. And the idea is, as I say, to take the current technology, but up it three times, four times.
So what's so different? I mean, they call it NMC, right? Or something like that. And this is NMC 2.0, if I understood correctly from your book. I don't know much about it. I'm just kind of repeating what you're writing there.
It's okay. No, that's good. What's your question then?
So my question is, can you simply explain why does a lithium ion battery work? And what's so big different between the NMC and then the NMC 2.0? In other words, what are they trying to do different?
Yeah. So very, very simply, they're trying to cram more electrons into a small space and to do so in a way that's much cheaper than they can do it today. And the way, just in 15, 20 seconds, the way the lithium ion battery works is lithium, there are two electrodes, and lithium starts in one electrode and it moves to the other one and then it moves back. It shuttles back and forth. That's the charge and discharge. The difference between the NMC, which is the central actor, that's the chemistry in the book. The difference between NMC and NMC 2.0 is you juice it with much more voltage than you're currently using in all today's batteries. And when you do that, there's a pop, there's a huge energy pop, and you get this incredibly powerful battery. You get the super battery.
So here's what's fascinating, is that you were talking about 4.3 volts versus 4.5 volts. That's the big juice that you're talking about. It doesn't sound like a lot of juice to the average guy.
Yeah, so when you, there's a physics phenomenon that happens when you cross that threshold between 4.3 and go over 4.5, really go up to 4.7, the atoms inside the electrode go into chaos. There's something about 4.5 volts that makes them go into a riot, and they move all over the place, and they ruin the battery. And so the objective is to figure out a way to get those atoms to stay in the same place.
So if they can do that, you'll just have that much more electricity that'll be stored there.
Exactly. So there's a direct relationship between voltage and that goes in and the energy that comes out. It's a big problem, but the payoff, if they can figure this out, a lot of battery scientists in the United States, but also around the world, are focused on this problem. This is the biggest problem in batteries right now.
So one of our listeners called in, you know, when we were waiting, and he said, well, why doesn't everyone just kind of work together? And I guess the answer is because money.
Exactly. You know, there's something about, we understand this about competition. It's a motivator. If you think that you're going to become a bazillionaire, and if you're the United States, if you're a country or China or Japan or South Korea, and you understand the scale of industries that could result from producing a battery of this type, then you want it invented in your country. And that's why there's a race among all these countries to be the place where this is done.
Right. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. And we'll also talk about how Japan sort of stole something from us in one of these, and you know, why you don't work together with, especially with other countries and so forth. But we got to take a pause right now, Steve. So if you'll hold on with us, we're going to just take a break and listen to some commercials and neat things like that. And we're going to come back. Right now, we're going to Nick Rehak with traffic. Take it away, Nick.
Thank you.
back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're with Steve Levine. We're talking about his book, The Powerhouse, because the battery is probably the most interesting technology that's being pursued at this point in time. And the game changer that this can bring to the world is absolutely astounding. That's why as financial guys, we're interested in this. You know, financial people should be interested in new technologies, breakthroughs that can bring all kinds of revolutions and innovation, just like the lithium-ion battery brought, right, Steve? It brought on the mobile revolution, didn't it?
It did. You first had the transistor, but the lithium-ion battery is what made the transistor mobile. Without it, a lot of the businesses that we love today, Apple Computer, the Tesla car, we wouldn't have these devices.
So, you know, we were talking about why wouldn't they cooperate. You know, you have a story in here about some of the great minds who have got us to this point. Goodenough and Thackeray. Thackeray and some of these others. And they had this research lab, and they bring a guy on from NTT, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So tell us that story and how this guy kind of, took the technology that he was working with his team with.
Yeah, there are a couple stories that in that same vein in which Japan ends up the winner in the battery race. But the one that you're describing there is at the University of Texas at Austin, and John Goodenough who's the inventor of the main lithium ion battery that we all use. It's in all of our computers, almost all of our phones. And he's on the war path. He doesn't want to go out without inventing yet another another blockbuster invention. And so he comes on with a brand new chemistry. It's called lithium iron phosphate. Meanwhile, the Japanese telephone company, NTT, had asked him, would you mind taking on one of our scientists for a few months? We'll pay for the whole thing just to see how you work. We'd appreciate it a lot. And so he did that as a gentleman, and this coincided with the invention of lithium iron phosphate. The guy goes home. 1 year later, Goodenough is figuring out the commercial value of the this cathode, only to find out that this inventor, this Japanese scientist, had gone home to NTT. They had sort of reverse engineered what he came home with, had sold the cathode to Japanese companies. And now that invention was on the Japanese market. It was on the world market, created by Japanese companies.
So now one of the heroes in this story is a guy named Jeff Chamberlain. And the interesting thing about him is that his passion is to see this new battery technology be a U.S. battery technology, which is fascinating. It's not about him getting any glory. It's not about him making a lot of money. It seems to be his whole passion is he wants this technology for the United States.
So Jeff Chamberlain is the central character in the book, and he makes no bones about it. He explicitly says, I want to beat the Chinese.
Hmm.
And he calls his scientists together once a week in a departmental meeting. He's the head of the battery department at a centrally important battery laboratory in the United States, Argonne National Lab, just outside of Chicago. And he calls his people together and revs them up, gets them juiced up with the idea that they're going to change the world, they're going to save the world, and they're going to beat the Chinese. They need to invent the super battery. And they go out, they charge out the door after these meetings, revved up into this frenzy, and they go at it. And And you're right. His central motivation is it's a patriotism. He's an American. I mean, you might call it an American battery nationalist.
Hmm. So one of the fascinating things as an investor now is that it seems that there have already, and you have to be careful as an investor, especially in startups and so forth, is that there seems to be already two major disasters in the investment world, A123 and Envia.
Right. So what happened with the former, with A123, attracted a lot of investment by Silicon Valley venture capitalists and from the U.S. government. The federal government backed it too. It ended up having a big setback, a battery setback with its chief customer, Fisker Motors. It had to come up with $55 million in order to, sort of overnight. It didn't have the money. It ended up declaring bankruptcy and was bought up by the Chinese. Today, it is the old company is successful. It's selling batteries, but it's doing so for a Chinese-owned company in the United States. Envia is a different story. Envia is a company I actually profile extensively in the book. It was seen by GM as the startup that was going to catapult GM to the forefront of electric cars. It was going to do so by creating this NMC 2.0, enabling it and allowing GM to put a 200-mile car on the road. And a lot of people believed in Envia. I believed in Envia. But it turned out that the company, the officers of the company, were vastly overstating what they had, and GM ended up canceling the contract, and I ended up having to rewrite my book. but it was a lesson, and the lesson is that. Because it's so hard, the battery is so hard to figure out, and because the stakes are so very, very high, you do get companies and scientists exaggerating what they have, what they can do.
Are there any publicly traded companies that are in the forefront at this moment in time? In other words, if you were going to invest in a battery company right now, would there be one in the U.S. that you'd be interested in?
Well, one, I can't be. I'll get into serious trouble if I start recommending companies in the area where I write, and I know you wouldn't want me to lose my day job. however, there are. Be cautious about. Make sure that the company that you're looking at, whether it's a private company or a publicly traded company, is showing its data. I've been warned this numerous times. If a company is not revealing consistent data, there's usually a reason, and usually it's that they don't have what they say that they have.
Sure.
And don't be jaded. Yes, it is hard, but there are companies that look like they might get there.
So after the downturn 2008-2009, President Obama brings out, what was it, $2 or $3 billion to help advance battery technology and so forth. Where did that money go?
$2.4 billion, and it went into a couple of areas. Well, it went into electric car companies and went into battery companies. Elon Musk got some of it. Dow got some of it, A123. So a bunch of companies, you know, took the money and put up factories, basically. And the idea was that the U.S. was going to go from zero, in other words, not creating any electric cars and not creating any lithium-ion batteries, to being a real a real player in the world. Most of the companies, most of the factories ended up going belly up. Some of them, a small minority of them still exist, and still have a chance. And one might say that Elon Musk was the best bet among all of them because he's validated the electric car.
Yep.
But it's, you know, this is venture capital, right? If you have one in 10, that make it, and that's a, you know, that's a blockbuster, that's a pretty good record. And the fact is, I'm a fan of this actually, because we did need to be in the game. If you believe that the U.S. needed to be in the battery game, in the battery race, and in the electric car race, this was how to do it. And so we're in.
Yeah. So you got to hold on with me, and we're going to be right back to the final part of the show. But right now, I've got to find out what's happening with the weather with Mark Thibodeau, and we'll be right back. Money, Richard, and Wealth. Take it away, Mark.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Steve Levine, and we're talking about the powerhouse. And if you're a serious investor, you need to know what's happening in battery technology, because it's a major game changer and what it can do to the world as a whole, you know, fossil fuels and cars and all kinds of things. It can be dramatically changed. The geopolitical world can be turned upside down when battery technology really takes off. So, Steve, let's talk a little more about Elon Musk a second or two, because, you know, he has been the one that's been most successful with batteries and so forth, battery technology. He just came out with this new battery for a house. Are you familiar with this, this new battery he's selling for houses?
I am.
Yeah.
I am.
So what do you think of this concept?
Yeah. I think that he again, Elon Musk, has again stolen the show. So we're talking about stationary batteries. They can be, you know, as big as a poster, a little bit thicker. That would be for your house, and much larger. That would be for a power grid. The idea is that you would pay $3,000 or so, put this in your house, and it would collect electricity during the day when rates are lower, and then you would use that power at night. And the electricity could be generated any way. It could be generated from coal, natural gas, or solar. But the idea is that your rates, the rates you pay per month in your home would be lowered and potentially lowered considerably by putting a battery there. And you could see in the same way, if you think back 2007 or so when the iPhone came out, very few people thought that the smartphone was going to become a viral device. Certainly Apple's competitors didn't think so, and suddenly you had to have one. This is what this Powerwall looks like to me. It's one of those things that you could imagine one person in one neighborhood getting, and suddenly that person's friend and neighbor wants one, and soon everybody wants one, and so I think he's really on. He's potentially really on.
What battery technology is he using?
He is using two different technologies. So he's using the same one in one of the batteries, the same one from his electric cars, the NCA, which is the one that you described. In the other one, he's using the NMC, the stuff that the Argon guys are making.
So he's using both technologies. But if, you know, if a bunch of people buy into the battery, can you buy electricity cheap at any time if everyone else is trying to buy it at the same time to charge their battery?
Well, yes, you can. So the idea, yeah, is that you would collect. It's the same thing as when everyone is trying to buy electricity at night. You would just plug this thing in during the day, and the impact on the whole system is to balance it out. It actually, it's got brilliance in it. The idea right now, the way that that utilities work around the country is that they are built to maximum size that are calculated by the very peak, the maximum amount that we use in any hour, including all of the businesses and everything, the maximum. So they overbuild the utilities. Well, if people are and businesses are balancing out their consumption, collecting during the day and then using it from their batteries at night, utilities don't have to build as big of generation capacity.
And we also have a lot of leakage of electricity.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
There's a lot of electricity that's created, never gets used, and it just disperses into the atmosphere. And so I guess these batteries could store that until they're needed.
Until the costs need to come way down, but with the stationary batteries, a big technological leap is not necessary. They simply need to scale up. The price needs to come down by 2/3. And when they do, I think, again, you're going to see these things take off. You're going to, if you buy a new home, say in 5-10 years, every new home that's built is going to have something like this in it.
Yeah. So, Steve, we only have a minute left, believe it or not. I mean, that's how fast time flies when we really have a topic that we love to talk about. So who is in the lead in the world? Who's the leading country right now?
Probably Japan.
Really? Why, that was disappointing. That was a letdown. Letdown, Steve. Thanks.
That is because that's because they were doing it first. They got the technology. We didn't have the vision. Japanese had the vision, commercialized batteries first, but we have the critical mass of battery scientists, so we can grab the lead.
How about China?
China, you can never count China out, but they're also competing with Japan and South Korea. Let's see, it's these four countries are the main competitors.
The United States, Korea, Japan, and China.
And China, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. They're all in the race. We have the best scientists. All of those three countries have got their manufacturing prowess. And China, of course, when it puts its mind behind something, its resources, you can't count China out. That's why it's a fearsome competitor in this race.
Yeah. Well, Steve, that's it. We're finished, but we really appreciate you sharing your knowledge. The book is great, The Powerhouse by Steve Levine. Thanks for your time, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.